The Cat and the Mouse, or How I Met Desktop Publishing. Conrad Taylor, October 2013. This is the fifth in my series of autobiographical monologues. In the last one, I described how I got involved with text composition and typesetting before 1985. Here, I shall describe how I played a part in what at the time we called the desktop publishing revolution, using personal computers not only for typesetting, but to design whole pages and publications, with pictures and everything. Now that's so commonplace these days that graphic designers starting work today have scarcely, if at all, known anything else. But here is my story. In 1984, I married Sengusa Sutitanakun, who, like most Thai people, was better known by her nickname, Noi. Two economic opportunities opened up to us. Firstly, we were invited to join a newly formed workers' cooperative, founded by Larry Jagan and Tony Kahane, to publish a socialist review of Asian political and economic affairs, called Inside Asia. Our first office-cum-studio was in Camden Town, but then we moved to the bottom of Pentonville Road, to a building which now houses a school of acting. Noi and I took on a job share, handling the design and production of the magazine. It wasn't the kind of job share where the partners take turns in the job. Noi and I worked side by side, quite intensively, every second month, in the run-up to the publication date, and at the time in between, we used the studio room for our own work projects. At least, that was the theory. Now, I took charge of the business of marking up the editorial typescripts, most of which came off Larry Jagan's Amstrad PCW word processor. And we sent them off for typesetting in Kilburn on Dunstan Chan's Compugraphic MCS photosetter. In my last recording, I described in some detail how these photo typesetting machines worked. What we got back from there was long rolls of resin-coated photographic bromide paper, with the text for each story typeset in a single long column. Somewhat anachronistically, and I say that because the term derives from when type was made up of cast bits of lead, we called these strips galley proofs. Now at this point, the workflow split into two parts. We made two photocopies of all of the typeset material. The editors and I took one of the photocopies and carefully proofread the typesetting, marking up where we needed corrections. Noi took the other photocopy, chopped it up with a scalpel, and did a trial layout by paste-up of the magazine, also figuring out which of the available photographs and graphics we should use, and how they should be resized and cropped. She had a really good eye for use of space, page composition, and photo composition. It then took a few days for us to get back the bromides of the corrected typesetting. Usually to save money, Dunstan and his team didn't run the whole thing out again, but sent us patches to replace the sections where we had detected mistakes. In the meanwhile, Noi and I would have made a late-night visit to the Rye Express Women's Printing Co-op in New Cross, to which we held a spare set of keys. We used their process camera, or graphic arts camera, to make screened 85 lines per inch bromides, or PMTs, of the photographs we were going to use. I loved using that equipment, and I'm going to make a separate recorded account someday about process photography and its now vanished role in the graphic arts. We now had all of the elements required to do camera-ready artwork, and Noi and I shared the job of pasting this up onto the artboards using hot-rolled wax as our adhesive. And this was the artwork that we sent to the Spiderweb Print Co-op in Finsbury Park to be photographed onto lith film and made into printing plates. The colour covers required a different process, which I won't go into here. Meanwhile, we lived in a long, thin flat in Penge in South London, belonging to Noi's sister Yi and Yi's husband Tanya Ponanan. We bought us a brown Burmese kitten, which we named after the fruit of the sugar palm tree, and while she was young, we brought her into work each day on the tube in a wicker carrying basket. She was our studio cat. Now, I mentioned earlier that we had not just one economic opportunity, but two. The other was that, through a series of coincidences, I'd met a chap called Colin Ringrose, who was in the business of selling graphic art supplies, but also wanted to expand into selling short 1- and 2-day workshops to train ordinary people how to produce publications. exactly the designing, page layout, art working, and all the stuff that Noy and I were doing for Inside Asia anyway, and the Thai Europe Thai Language magazine, which we did as a sideline. Colin Ringrose had a Swedish business partner, whom he in turn had met by accident at a trade fair in Germany. Björn Carlson, who owned a print shop in Gothenburg, had already started running training courses of this kind in Sweden, and was wondering if he could expand into the British market doing the same thing. Rather than compete, Colin and Björn decided to go into business together, and Björn's company, Populär Kommunikation Aktiebolaget, became a part-owner of Popular Communication Courses in the UK. One afternoon in 1984, Colin introduced me to Björn at a lunch we had in a pub near Hyde Park, and the upshot was that I became one of the founding group of Popcom course leaders in the UK, which was an engagement that lasted for more than 20 years after that. So now I've set the scene for how Noy and I met desktop publishing. It actually happened like this. In September, or October 1985, Noy and I visited the Repro 85 show, an expo for the graphic arts and print production industries, which I think was in Earl's Court. Of course we visited the Popcom stand, but we also decided to take a wander around the show floor. Now, the Gestetner Company, and in a previous recording I've said quite a bit about the duplicating machine which David Gestetner had invented, well, Gestetner had diversified into supplying photocopiers, simple offset plate makers for offset, and that sort of thing, and they'd become very recently excited at the possibilities offered by the Apple Macintosh line of computers, which Apple had launched in January 1984. At first, the innovative Mac, with its paper-white bitmapped display, its multiple fonts, drop-down menus, and unusual mouse-driven interface, was a very exciting machine, but generally regarded as an expensive toy, and certainly Noy and I had never seen one. But earlier that year, two momentous technical developments had greatly increased the attractiveness of the Mac, to graphic artists in particular. In collaboration with the Adobe Company, founded by computer scientists John Warnock and Chuck Geschke, Apple brought out the first ever laser printer to be driven by Adobe's PostScript imaging language. The Apple LaserWriter originally cost about $10,000, but it could print just about any combination of type and images onto plain paper at 300 dots per inch. And the high price was mitigated by the ease with which the printer could be networked to up to 31 computers at once. The second development was that Paul Brainerd, formerly involved in developing software systems for newspapers, created a startup company in Seattle called Aldus Corporation, and in July 1985 they launched Aldus PageMaker, which I think was the first page makeup software that conformed to the slogan WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get. That's how the claim went anyway. What it meant was that you could sit down at a desk, create a poster or a newsletter entirely on the screen of this little computer, and print it out onto plain paper using a laser printer sitting at the other end of the desk. And from this, the term desktop publishing was born. Now, Gestetner were experimenting with another marketing-oriented name for this method. Along the lines of CAD, or computer-aided design, they called it CAT for computer-aided typesetting. And to adorn their stand at Repro 85, they'd brought along some black cardboard silhouette images of cats in profile, and sat them on top of the Apple Macintoshes with their tails dangling down one side. Now, these cats looked quite extraordinarily like the little brown Burmese cat we had at home, and as cat lovers we were naturally drawn over to the display. Manning the Gestetner stand was a very pleasant chap called Andrew James. As I later learned, he'd only quite recently split up with a Korean girlfriend, so much as Noy and I noticed the cardboard cats, Andrew noticed the Anglo-Oriental couple who were looking at the cats. He came up to us. "What do you do?" he asked, or something like that. I explained that we worked for a magazine he could never possibly have heard of, Inside Asia. "I know Inside Asia," he said to our surprise. "I see it on sale at the School of Oriental and African Studies." Oh, goodness me. I also explained that I was starting to do industrial-style training workshops in graphic design, typography, layout and print production for Popular Communication Courses. "That's very interesting," said Andrew. "We've got this machinery, which is great for producing small publications, etc. We expect that bosses will buy these with all sorts of crazy expectations that having this machine will turn their secretary or their PA into a graphic designer. Do you think such a person can be taught how to do graphic design?" I said I did indeed think it could be done, at least to a reasonable degree of proficiency, and he invited me subsequently to visit the Gazetteer Marketing HQ on the Euston Road. He was very keen for me to write a slim book, which they would publish, and which would be a beginner's guide to the principles of good design and typography using desktop publishing equipment. They even loaned us a 512K Macintosh with an extra floppy disk drive, and this came home with us to Penge so that I could familiarise myself with the system and the free software that it shipped with, MacWrite, MacPaint and MacDraw. And do you know what our cat did when she was introduced to the Mac? She jumped up and sat on it in exactly the same pose as the Gestetner cardboard cat. So that is the tale of the cat and the mouse, but it is the start of many stories, not the end of one. I don't want to go on for too much longer today, as I notice these episodes have been getting quite lengthy, so I'm going to wrap up with a few indicative directions and follow them up in future recordings. In 1986, Inside Asia was tottering towards business failure, but the popular communication teaching was really taking off. Noi and I had successfully sold the Penge flat for Tanya and Yi and transferred the money to Thailand. It did mean that we became homeless, but we had an offer of quite spacious accommodation in Manchester. We had a conversation with our local bank, and the lady bank manager looked at our business plan for the business project we called Ideography, and she loaned us £5,000, and we also had family support from our parents. In mid-1986, as soon as we set up home in Manchester on the top floor of our friend Colleen's house, we bought the following. For about £2,200 plus VAT, one Apple Macintosh Plus computer with a megabyte of RAM, later expanded to 4 megabytes. For £1,350 plus VAT, an external hard drive with a storage capacity of, wait for it, 20 megabytes. Yes, young listeners, 20 megabytes, whereas your typical USB flash drive these days costs about 16 quid for 400 times that capacity. Also, we got a dot matrix printer, a copy of Aldus PageMaker software, and Microsoft Word 1.05 for Mac. Remember, Microsoft Windows hadn't been invented yet. Also, we equipped two darkrooms, one with a Dynagraph 602MS Reaper camera, which stood about chest high to me, and an activation stabilization processor for making instant bromide shots. I'm happy to say that this equipment proved immediately useful in helping to prepare my teaching materials and documentation for the PopCom courses. At the end of 1986, I found myself in Sollentuna, north of Stockholm, where Populär Kommunikation was holding its first big publishing conference, the first to run under the title Trialog. It was a cold winter, the lake outside was frozen, cars could drive across. For the most part, I stayed snug inside the Sollentuna Star Hotel. It was a pleasure to meet fellow PopCom course leaders, especially our American superstar colleague, the magazine designer Jan V. White. "I have a Mac too," said Jan, "but I'm darned if I know how to use it, which is kind of embarrassing because Letraset Corporation have engaged me to write a book about design grids to ship with their desktop publishing software, Ready, Set, Go." Jan was grumbling about having to shell out loads of money for computer courses back in the USA, so we cut a deal. "If I pay your airfare to Connecticut and noise, can you teach me Mac in the mornings and in the afternoons we'll go play and have a holiday?" "You're on," said I. And a very nice holiday we had too. For me, the highlight was a side trip to Cambridge and Boston, where we were treated to a tour of the type design and digitization house Bitstream, and met their English boss, Matthew Carter. You may know some of the typefaces he's designed, such as Georgia and Verdana. I think it was also in 86 or 87 that I got invited to give a talk at a conference organized in England by the Monotype Corporation. One of my fellow speakers was the designer John Miles of Banks & Miles. He actually did write an early design guide for newly fledged desktop publishers, the very thing I'd failed to do for Gazetteer. Another of the Monotype conference team was the Berlin-based type designer Eric Spiekermann. He told me he was just back from a stint working with Adobe, digitizing the font family Frittiger, using a strange kind of cubic equation curves with handles. He later got me an introduction to Dr. Peter Caro, the boss of the German typehouse IAW Unternehmensberatung, which in time led to my spending a week in Hamburg, learning to fly their Icarus software. In April 1987, Another PopCom colleague, Doig Simmons, who ran the design and medical illustration studio for the Royal Postgraduate Medical School in London, he kind of smuggled me into a special workshop run by McQueen Systems on behalf of Adobe, where we were introduced to a later version of the software tool that Eric Spiekerman had been trying to describe to me. It was Adobe Illustrator. And we were each given a free copy to go and learn and play with. Now, I've used Illustrator from that day to this, through 26 years and, umpteen versions. And it makes Illustrator the longest-lived tool in my software toolkit. But me and Illustrator, that deserves a story to itself. It wasn't all that long after that Noy and I made our next trip to Thailand, where we made contact with the Apple distributor for Thailand, Sahawiriat Systems. We made them a gift of some Thai-themed PostScript artwork I'd made, and in exchange they gave us some PostScript Thai fonts that they had made. The fonts were designed to work with the Thai version of the Mac operating system, but I used Altsys Fontographer software to move the characters around and then we could use them. I have to say that once we had our Apple Mac working in Thai, so you could typeset Thai in PageMaker, Noy was no longer interested in our big bilingual Olympia Supertype typewriter, which I think we ended up donating to the Thai section of the BBC World Service, then in Bush House. It was only natural that popular communication should get more and more involved with the new publishing technology, and it was my job to lead the way, certainly in the UK. The first PostScript printer that PopCom bought was a LaserWriter Plus, and rather than being based in the Bridge North office, it came to live with Noy and me, and got used to prepare quality course materials. We also designed the PopCom marketing brochure, or prospectus, which was sent out by direct mail twice a year. And when the first UK PostScript imaging bureau was set up, called the Graphics Factory in West London, we were one of the first to make use of its Linotronic 100 image setter to output PageMaker pages to Bromide at 2,540 lines per inch resolution. At this point, I think I will make a chapter break in my story, although there are many sub-themes to revisit in subsequent episodes. I think you will appreciate, however, it was exciting to be one of desktop publishing's pioneers. I seem to have led a hand-to-mouse existence ever since, and I've owned 5 desktop Macs and 6 Apple laptops since then. For me, desktop publishing led on to other themes, including experiments in early telematics, through the Manchester host system and the internet, the first days of the World Wide Web, the standard generalized markup language, participation in the Seaboard Publishing Conferences in California, and membership of various associations such as the PageMaker User Group, the Electronic Publishing Specialist Group, the British Computer Society, the Information Design Association, and much besides. And the adventure continues.